Association and Service Employee International, SEIU. Do we have a consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay, seeing yes, then let's move on to action in closed session. We did not have any action in closed session. Move on to approval of minutes. Do I hear a motion for the approval of the minutes for October 18th?
I'm going to abstain.
Okay.
I make.
Oh, I'm sorry. We have a motion.
I'm going to abstain. That's
and I need a
second. I'll second that.
A motion and a second for the minutes of October 18th. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing
I will be abstaining, but I just wanted to express my gratitude to the video guys, and I missed the last meeting, but I was able to review it and review the presentations, which was very helpful, and I appreciate it, but I'll be abstaining.
Okay, any other discussion? Anybody from the audience that would like to speak to us? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Carries 6-0 with one abstention. The board did receive three pieces of correspondence, one from Senator Joe Simidian asking for support of Senate Constitutional Amendment 5, another from Annalie, I believe it is, Sachs-Jacoby, supporting the Adults with Disabilities Program, and then also a letter from Bobby Loomis, also supporting the Adults with Disabilities Program. Thank you very much. We'll move on to public comment. Mr. Quisenberry.
We have one request, and it's Susan Westwood and Louise Kramer.
I'm neither one of those people. I'm Rick Mayfield, principal at Pacheco Elementary. But I want to introduce Louise and Susan because they have this wonderful program they've started at Pacheco with the acronym of PEAK, Providing Extracurricular Activities for Kids. And it has been fabulous to link children who most probably otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity to participate in extracurricular activities. And they'll explain it to you. But we've had a first round of grants go out, and it has been very successful so far.
Hi, I'm Louise Kramer, and a bilingual aide at Pacheco. And this started about 2 years ago when I had parents coming up to me and asking, how do I get my kid signed up for soccer? You know, my kid loves music. How do I go about helping them get into music? So just on my own, I started helping these parents. And Susan at the time had her son in kindergarten, and she came up with this idea one day. She said, we need to do something with this. We need to find a way and more people to help so that we can get more kids involved. Because as we know, the kids that, you know, have the means to do things oftentimes get to do everything. And there's a lot of children out there that don't get to do things. So our aim is to help kids and parents find the avenue to get their kids involved, because everybody wants their kids involved in some way or another. And as we all know, the kids that are involved in things after school, music, sports, art, something that they love or passionate about, carries into their education. I know it with my own children. I have two high school kids, and they love school because of the running or the football and the friends they have and the social part of that is part of staying involved in school and doing well. So our aim is to hit it at the elementary school level to get kids confident that they can do things, as well as parents giving them the confidence and know-how so they can also learn how to get their kids enrolled in things. Because, I mean, really, we're all about keeping kids in school. And so this is a program that we've kind of come up with, and we'd like to share it with you and with other schools to adopt. And Susan is kind of I call her the business head. She's awesome. So this is Susan.
Hi, I'm Susan Westwood. I have two children in the school district, one at Laguna, one at Pacheco. And we operate under the PTA umbrella. We looked around a bit to try to find a place for this program so that people who donated money could receive a tax benefit from it. So the PTA was generous enough to take us under their wing, and it's been a perfect fit for us. We worked on getting this program launched for almost 2 years, also raising money for the program. And we had our first round of applications this spring. We have students apply twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall. So our spring application cycle is finished now, and it was tremendously successful. We thought we might have 10 or 12 applicants. We have 31. And
gosh, thank you very much. Perhaps, I don't know, I'm assuming board members will go check out your website, but if you have other things that, if you have any written material, please gather it up and give it to Mrs. Holmes, and she'll make sure that we all get copies of it, because it sounds like a phenomenal thing that you guys are doing and really helping out the students in your community.
We're an all-volunteer organization with a very limited budget, so we got some free web hosting from Digital West, so most of our material is online. We don't print any brochures, and we try to keep our costs down that way.
Okay,
so.
Great. Well, thank you. Yes, Mrs. Rogers.
I'm just thinking, I think it's wonderful what you're doing, and I wonder if this kind of an organization or activity might be qualify for a TEACH grant. That would be up to the TEACH Foundation. Mm-hmm. It's not a classroom activity, but it is certainly beneficial to students.
Yeah. I've applied for a couple of grants and been pretty successful with some of them. So a lot of what I do is just search the internet for what's available when I have some free time. But it would be great if I could get some more information about it.
I think, well, TEACH benefits the students of San Luis Coastal, and I think there are probably people here tonight who could explain to you a little more about how that works. Okay. They know more than I do, but they have been just phenomenal, the ways in which they've supported the classrooms in this district.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Any
you.
Other questions? Okay. Is there anybody else from the public that would like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to bring it back. We have our reports from our student representatives, and we have Tessa Reeves from San Luis High and Haley Ramos from Morro Bay High School. And Haley, you want to start first this time?
Hello, hello. Some past events on campus at Morro Bay. We had a Wear Pink Day for breast cancer awareness, because October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And also at lunch, we had a table where students could write the name of someone that they know who has been affected by cancer, or someone who is a friend, anyone that they knew was affected by any type of cancer, and on a pink heart. And at our football game that Friday night, students from the leadership class shaped the hearts into the word hope, and we hung it on the locker room. So, and a lot of people participated, so it was really nice. And then the following week, we had Yellow Day for Spina Bifida Awareness Month. Spina bifida is a malformation in the spine that can affect people all their life, and the worst, it results in death if it's not fixed. So, and then yesterday, we had our Halloween costume contest. Most of Morro Bay was decked out in scary and classy and funny costumes, so we recognized that and awarded people accordingly, so it was good fun. Upcoming events on campus. Just in the leadership class, we're planning our WOW Week, which is Week of Winter, and it's one of the most fun things, in my opinion, during the school year. We have Pajama Day, and we have a hot chocolate giveaway day if people bring their own mugs from home. So people get excited for that. They actually do the dishes for once. And also we're preparing for our mini mock rock assembly, which is like an assembly that the leadership class puts on to get everyone rallied up for mock rock. And it's really fun because some of the kids in the leadership class who are less socially active with the school get to dance in front of everyone. So it's kind of... it's letting them break the ice with everyone at once. We've also been just doing class bonding and getting to know each other a lot, so warm, fuzzy things. And then on November 16th, our executive board from the leadership class is participating in a CATA conference in Ventura, so it'll probably be really fun just hanging out with each other. And then in general, Week of Winter is the week before finals, so have all that warm, fuzzy winter stuff, study really hard that week, take your tests the next week, and then go to winter break. And then some new stuff on campus. We have a tutoring place on campus called the Learning Center, where peer tutors, usually AP students, juniors and seniors, tutor people from any grade level in any subject to keep them off of the F list and to make them steer towards success. And I'm a peer tutor, and I find it really rewarding when someone, their GPA goes up or they understand a new concept better, and it's really fun. And it's usually people who have free periods, so we give up our own time to help everyone, and it's just really fun. And in the result of a student raising their grades, we send them a slip congratulating them along with Smarties. So, yeah, and they love that. And then Mr. Black, our new dean this year, has taken a new direction.
So the football team helped with the walk too, like as course marshals, kind of directing people where to go. So that was really fun. And then in November, a few students in ASB are also going to the CADA Leadership Conference in Ventura. And ASB is also planning on a group community service project that we will all do together. And we're still deciding on what specifically that project will be. On the 19th of November, we are having a campus beautification day, which was an idea of our new principal. And he wants us to clean up excess pine needles and whatnot. And then we'll all have another one right before the WASC committee comes later this year. Also, we have finals week coming up just before Thanksgiving, and December 1st, we are having an AIDS Awareness Day where Slo High is collaborating with Cal Poly, and everyone's going to wear red, and then we make a human red ribbon on the football field and then take a picture of it from above, and we did that last year, and it was really cool. So, yeah, that's it.
Thank you very much. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Just two quick questions. Tessa, is there a theatrical production going on at the high school right now?
Yes, there is a play going on. I think it's called Picasso and something. I don't know. It has a longer title. But I heard I'm going to see it this weekend, and I heard it's really funny, so I think you should all go and support it.
And Haley, the actual mock rock then, you mentioned the assembly, but when's the mock rock?
We have not been notified by the main FNL committee as to when they're holding their county mock rock at Cal Poly, so we're just waiting on word for that. But everyone should go and cheer on all of your favorite acts. And I forgot one thing. Since Halloween was yesterday and there's trick-or-treat for UNICEF, our Jew crew on campus took it upon themselves to keep UNICEF going through this last week. So on campus, we have boxes in the third and fourth period classes that collect money. And I believe 25 cents gives 10 children in a country clean water to drink for a day. And it goes up from there of what they can get. And the biggest thing that they can receive with the money is like a school in a box for certain communities in other countries.
Well, thank you very much. And just from my perspective, and I hope from the board's perspective, it's just so nice to hear what the high schools are doing to support the community and to support people that have really needs in the community. So thanks to both of you, and thanks to both of your high schools for everything you're doing. As always, you're welcome to stay or feel free to go. We really value your presence. Let's move on to the Teach Award Grants. Is somebody from the administration doing that, or should I just, we'll get Terry straight up here. So representing the Teach Foundation is Terry Main, and this says, Terry, that you're going to be presenting nearly $20,000 in grants in this cycle.
That's true. Yeah, we put it in writing, and we managed to accomplish it. I'm very pleased to be here tonight to present the Fall 2011 Teach Awards. We have awarded $19,766.39. This is our largest grant award ever, and we really owe it to a late-inning donation from the Dynegy Morro Bay Power Plant in the amount of $10,000 that came in to teach in August. They requested it be put in the pass-through fund, so we did, and we let all the teachers know that we had additional money, and we had a record number of applications, as you can well imagine. So what we'd like to do is continue the format. We're going to try to be quick. You've been very generous with your time with Teach to let us actually have the teachers themselves tell you about the grants. So we are going to kick that off right now with Terry Wright from Baywood. And we've got quite a contingent here, so we'll try to get through in short order.
Hi, I'm Terry Wright. I'm a Library Media Center technician at Baywood. And I just there was an interest among teachers for MobiViews, which is a pad that uses Bluetooth technology to connect to the computer and your projector. So when a teacher writes on the board, on the pad, it projects up to the computer. So it's pretty cool. And teachers can be mobile, moving around the classroom using it. And we received a $1,000 grant for two MobiViews for Baywood. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Elaine Rosenfield from Bishop's Peak and Teach, and I am honored to have received $1,000 from the Teach Foundation, so I want to thank them for their tremendous support of teachers and classrooms. The $1,000 is one part of a number of grants that I'm working on to put on a math festival for both Bishop's Peak and Teach schools. We will spend an entire day of...
And our kids really loved it. It's a great experience for them to be able to go. We have somebody come to the school, and they're able to dress up like they're actually part of the Gold Rush and pan for gold and wash laundry and cook food and everything like that to make it feel like they're actually part of the Gold Rush, which is a really, really great experience. I applied for it's called an IntelliScanner, Library Access Scanner, and it's a little handheld scanner that scans the barcodes on your library books and then uploads them online, and so parents can have 24 access to the books in our library, and they can see what books their students have checked out, and they can make checkout lists and work with their students to pick out books at their individual levels. And I'm hoping it's going to be really great for my class because I have a lot of students that aren't able to purchase their own books for themselves, and so they're going to be able to check these books out from our library and take them home, and we'll be able to keep track of them, so we won't be losing books, which will be really nice as well. And then... My fifth grade teaching partner, Brittany Andrews, and I applied for Mobi Clickers. So Brittany's going to talk about that as well.
So last year, CL Smith, all of the upper grades were awarded grants from Teach to purchase MobiViews, which was talked about previously. They're a wonderful technology in the classroom. We use them daily, hourly, to walk around and interact with our students and also provide a constant visual and a constant model for the lesson. This year we applied to get current Mobi clickers for our school site, and we were awarded $1,000 to do that. And if you're not familiar with the clicker technology, it's a great way to put technology in the hands of the students and provide us with instant feedback as far as their understanding and their grasping of the concept. So it's like a little remote control that each student has. And as we're going through the lesson, we can program in stop and check kind of questions, and they can answer right then. And that gives us instant data we can see on the screen, the students can see on the screen, and we can assess and move on from there. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name's Terry Madison, and I'm a fifth grade teacher at Los Ranchos Elementary, and I was the lucky recipient of a $500 Teach Foundation grant that I'm going to be using for ordering a large collection of nonfiction books for my classroom library, and a small amount of it for adding to my battle book collection. But the reason I'm doing this, and I asked for the grant, is because the comprehensive literacy information tells us that it's important to significantly increase the number of nonfiction books you have in your library so that your percentages are actually ultimately more nonfiction than fiction as you go through the years in the classroom. So that's why I'm doing it, because I've only been teaching for a couple years, and my nonfiction books are not too many yet, that when I told the kids that I'd won this grant, they were so excited, and within about 5 minutes I had a stack of cards this big with topics that they were interested in learning about. So that was really exciting. So I want to thank the Teach Foundation for helping me on my goal of creating a classroom of the future.
Hi, my name is Ken Hotelling. I'm one of the sixth grade teachers at Monarch Grove Elementary School in Los Osos. And the Teach Foundation was kind enough to honor a grant request to taking all the sixth graders at our school on an ancient artifact tour up at the Hearst Castle. While we arrive at the Hearst Castle, the special docents up there have a special tour that's dedicated specifically for the sixth grade standards that kind of concentrates itself on the ancient Greek, Roman, and Egyptian artifacts that they have at the castle. And so through their generosity, they're going to bring the education that we started in the classroom truly alive. So thank you very much to the Teach Foundation.
Hi, my name is Catherine Kirby, and I'm also at Monarch Grove, and I teach fourth grade. And this is the fourth year that my class has been involved in the Salmon Enhancement Project, and we work with the salmon enhancement people in the county, and we have a tank in our classroom, and we start off with eggs, and we go through the whole cycle, the life cycle of this salmon, and then we go over to Lopez Lake. We are fortunate enough to see that our lake is at 95% capacity, and some of my students that I had in third grade, and then I had again in a 3-4 combination, went back last year, and the field that they were able to walk through the year before was now filled with water. And so it was a really good experience for them to see the difference in levels of water and how these salmon will have to adapt to this new environment. And so I took a couple pictures, and I know you can't see them all, but the first thing we do is we sit together, and with the Salmon Enhancement Project, we get journals, and they start brainstorming about all the things we've learned about the life cycles. And then from there, they go and put their little fish in the water, and many of them are all, oh, bye, bye, you know, and when a fish first enters the water, a lot of times it just been like this with the students in my class, and I appreciate the money that the Teach Foundation has given me, the $880 to continue this great endeavor that I'm able to do year after year. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Megan August Evans, and I'm the math intervention teacher at Monarch Grove Elementary in Los Osos. And I am delighted to be here this evening to receive the grant from Teach Foundation to expand our growing FUN Resource Center, which I called it, which is the Forever Understanding Numbers Resource Center. And we'll be acquiring more conceptual tools for students, teachers, and parents to check out so that students can grasp the material that they're learning in the classroom in a more concrete level. And in addition to tools that will be purchased, we have a library that is going to be developed so that students can bring home reading books that are at their reading level that are related to the mathematical concepts that they're learning in the regular classroom. So thank you very much, and the kids, thank you as well.
Hi, my name is Lisa Stevens. I'm a third grade teacher at Pacheco Elementary School, and we've been told we're running out of time, so I'm going to be shorter so everyone gets a chance. But I'm so excited to be awarded a $500 to purchase guided reading sets for my students. As we know, our focus is with comprehensive literacy and with guided reading groups, and we know how important that Just Right book is and those really interesting texts. So I'm looking forward to buying sets of books at their Just Right level that also correlate with the social studies and science standards that we're teaching. So thank you so much.
Hi, my name is Connie Reynoso. I'm also a Pacheco, and I'm so fortunate to have received a little over $600 to continue a program that I started last year, which was purchasing hardcover books for my students to take home with them, and I recorded myself reading this, all of the books. So that was many hours of my time, but so valuable because I'm passionate about kids reading and loving reading. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Margarita Zad, and I'm a third grade teacher at Pacheco Elementary School. I teach Spanish language arts, and I found that the books that have the background knowledge and relate to the students' lifestyles are not that many available in Spanish or the ones we have. So I want to purchase with the $500 that was granted to me by the Teach Foundation books that reflect their background and their interest of their culture that they live in for my guided process reading books. And also I plan to record some so that they can listen to them in the classroom, and as well as Connie Reynoso, hopefully be able to take those home and practice with their families. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Lisa Ahanel. I'm also at Pacheco School. I have a former student right there that I'm really happy to see in leadership, Tessa. She used to be one of my first graders in my Spanish. I'm a Spanish model, so when the students are with me, they're immersed in Spanish. When they're with my partner, my teaching partner, they're immersed in English. I also am so grateful to have received a Teach grant for buying more books. I will be purchasing leveled readers. It's more difficult to find books in Spanish than it is in English, especially leveled readers. And I've always bought everything I could find at Barnes & Noble, etc. But yard sales, you don't usually find Spanish readers, and much less at the level that a first grader could access independently. Most of the books that you can find are usually storybooks that are more like a third grade level. So I'll be purchasing leveled readers, and they'll be used in the classroom for their little Spanish-English buddies. So I have children paired off so that a native Spanish speaker is practicing reading with an English native speaker. That's been really successful so far. And then they will borrow the books and take them home to read to their parents and with their families. So thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Abisher, and I'm a reading intervention teacher at Pacheco. And I applied for this grant with two Spanish language arts kindergarten teachers, and we are implementing a program where children go home with books in Spanish that their parents will read to them, as we know that's such an important time in life for kids to develop their early literacy skills. And so Teach is providing nearly $1,300 to provide books for that. Thanks.
Good evening. My name is Marley Schmidt. Thank you so much for having us here tonight. I want to give a special thanks to Terry Main and her foundation. We cannot say enough about how supportive Terry has been. She has even called.
Good evening. I'm Joy Center Principal at Sinsheimer. I can't thank the Teach Foundation enough for awarding us a grant. We know that Initiative 4 for the board is improving the language arts program, and again, you heard Marley talk about that laser-like focus on comprehensive literacy. Our grant was $694 to purchase When Readers Struggle, which is a book that goes along with our Fonis and Pinnell benchmark assessment testing for reading, so that all of the students in our entire school will benefit from this grant, because as teachers work with individual students who are struggling in reading after doing their benchmark assessments, they can go to this guide, which aligns with the best benchmark assessment, and it gives them immediate intervention strategies that are applicable to the classroom right away. And so this is going to benefit every teacher in our school and every student. So again, I can't thank Terry as well as all of the other board members on the Teach Foundation for their wonderful support for comprehensive literacy. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Dana Francis, counselor at Sinsheimer Elementary and counselor for our special day class. My esteemed colleague, Wendy Turner, regrets that she can't be here to personally thank Terry Main and the Teach Foundation for our $250 Garden Classroom Award. The students are excited about how they're going to spend it. I know some of you on the board have come and seen what an integral part this garden is in their educational process. And so I'm extending a personal invitation to all of you. Come have lunch with us. We're 3 minutes down the road on Augusta. Bring your sandwich. If you forget to pack a lunch, I'll personally get you a kid's lunch from the cafeteria. Please come see how our garden grows. And you really want to get on Guy Crabb's project.
Howdy, my name is Guy Crabb from Teach School, and I'd like to thank the Teach Foundation for sending our 55 fourth graders on a train trip. And we're going to leave from the wonderful historic city, San Luis Obispo, and at 6:45 in the morning and go down to Santa Barbara and go visit the County History Museum down there, and then the Mission, Santa Barbara Mission, the Queen of the Missions, and then walk back down State Street and possibly go on Stearns Wharf, and then get back on the train at around 5 o'clock in the afternoon and head back for home. And it is a wonderful historical trip that coincides with fourth grade history, which is a focus of California. So I'd like to thank the Teach Foundation, and I would like to invite all of you to go on our train trip as well. I won't give you a lunch, but, you know, maybe. But thank you very much.
Hello, everyone. How are you guys? My name is Eric Benitez. I'm a teacher at Laguna Middle School. I'm also the teacher coach for mock trial. This is our second year, so last year we got second place. And I want to give lots of hugs and kisses to the Teach Foundation for the award of $400. And I would like to invite all of you to come and see our competition. So I'm going to send in, emails to all of you of the dates and everything. So thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Kathy Aaron, and I'm from Laguna Middle School, and thank you, Teach Foundation. I know it's not Terry's foundation, although she wants it to be. It is the Teach Foundation, and it's a wonderful foundation, and I'm taking 45 leadership and AVID students, former leadership student, Tessa, down to Anaheim, California for a leadership conference where they will mingle with 500 other middle school students and learn about giving back to their community and what it's like to be a leader and a team player and be able to help not only their school community to make it an inclusive school, but also outside of their school and the community surrounding us. So thank you, Teach Foundation.
Renee Coiner from Pacific Beach, continuation students who come to us credit deficient, and lately they've been very credit deficient in math. Some of them coming as juniors with 0 and 5 credits of math. And so I teach algebra, and it's very abstract to them. They don't like it. They don't understand it. And so this $850 is for some manipulatives to make it more concrete, easier for them to understand. So I thank the Teach Foundation and Terry very much.
Hi, I'm Melissa Newman. I'm from Pacific Beach, and I want to thank the Teach Foundation for their generous contribution to our mock trial team. I think most of you have heard about it before, and I invite everybody to come. And certainly the competitions are very exciting, but our scrimmages are fun, too. We're already underway, thanks to the guidance and leadership of Mr.
Camera checkout for the ASL student video project. It's been a new tradition in the past 2 to 3 years. We've had students in the foreign language department take what they learn in class home with them to create home-based videos, home tours, song duets, art directive videos, etc., and then return to class and present what they have learned in video form for the students to peer review, peer critique, and just for simple enjoyment. So thank you for the grant, for the Teach Foundation, for the camera, so students can check that out and make our classroom more technologically advanced.
Hello, my name is Kathy Stevenson. I teach moderate to severe disabilities at San Luis High School. And our program, unfortunately, the students are not able to participate in the marching band or the guitar classes or the choir due to their cognitive and physical and behavioral disabilities. But we do go down there, once a week, down to the marching band, and we sing and we march and we dance and we participate the best we can. However, we can't really get our hands on those instruments and flags and guitars. So what Teach Foundation did for us last year was provide $300 and this year $400 for our own they're kind of play instruments, as you will, ukuleles and scarves, and we just have a hoot and holler in time once a week in the classroom, and we just absolutely love it. You see the pride and joy that it brings to their faces, as well as it follows the state standards under music theory and movement. So thank you once again, Teach Foundation.
Hello, I'm Jan Fetcho at San Luis Obispo High School. I teach computer science, and I coach the robotics team after school. We are Slobotics 920. And Teach Foundation has provided a $1,000 grant, thank you very much, for a robotics field, which is a 12 by 12 field, which costs a lot of money. And it's going to allow us to host a robotics meet here in San Luis Obispo on February 11th, and we would like all of you to come. We will announce a location. I will email all of you. And it is a phenomenal event. It will have 24 robotics teams, and to see, it is a STEM competition, science, technology, engineering, math. These kids are building engineering feats. Thank you so much.
Good evening. I'm Jennifer O'Hagan, EdTech TOSA, and I was encouraging teachers to pursue TEACH grants regarding technology, and here is one of my proud recipients, Dave Gomes, and he's going to tell you a little bit about it.
Hi, Dave Gomes, San Luis Obispo High School. I'd like to thank San Luis Coastal for supplying a TOSA for the technology TOSA so that we can get informed on what's available out there, as well as the training that's going to go behind it. In fact, next week, there's a Mobi training for some of the teachers that have just received the Mobis. And so thank you for the Teach Foundation for supplying us with the money to be able to purchase the new technology to help out the kids in the classroom, keep them engaged. And the visuals are just going to be worth 1,000 words. So you can talk about it all day long, but when they see it up on there on the screen and they can see it rapidly, graphs changing versus me doing them by hand, slowly, the engagement is going to be there. So appreciate it. Thank you.
I thank everyone for their patience. This was extraordinarily long because of the additional money we had, so we promised to shorten it down a little bit. But we'll be back in January, late January, early February. We will come back and tell you about our this year's fundraiser. So have a great night, and thanks everyone for their time, and a big hand to all of our wonderful teachers and everything that they do for our students. Thanks.
Terry, before you scoot away, I think there's a question from one of the board members.
Oh, yeah?
Actually, a couple of board members, it looks like.
Okay.
Ms. Catherine and then Mark.
Terry, I just wanted to say, it's not a coincidence, but it leapt out at me how well aligned the awards were with the district's initiatives, and I think that the credit goes to the teachers as well as to you. The teachers have obviously designed their curriculum around making sure they're meeting some of the SMART goals, and they need these tools to do it. And it's obvious because, you know, four of them were our culture of care, and one is at-risk students, and six are from the Classroom of the Future, and six are from our STEM program, and eight are for literacy, and three are for the accelerated outside the classroom experiences. So whether by design or just because it happened that way, thank you for supporting our initiatives.
Well, it's really the teachers who are taking the initiative to actually apply for the grants, and so we're extremely thrilled to be able to do what we can, and we'll continue to do so.
Laid out our scheduled presentations so to ensure that we remain on target to inform the board regarding our progress on the initiative. So this evening, I would like to move forward that your presentation this evening will be on Classrooms of the Future, and I'm excited for Amelia to go ahead and share with you what she's been working on with her team.
Can you hear me?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for having us. This is really exciting to get to share some of what we've been doing this year
with technology since July 1st. The time flies, and it's amazing what you can get done, accomplished in a short amount of time. So I'm here with a team of folks who are all participating. This is really a team effort. It's not just my department, but all departments have been involved in this process. And we have members of our EdTech Steering Committee here. I think, Lene's here, and several of the folks involved in the presentation are also on the committee, so I'm excited to be here. Classrooms of the Future is a term that you'll hear often, or if you're out on the web, you'll see that quite often. All you have to do is go to Google or YouTube and type that in, and you'll see all kinds of videos and examples of things that are happening out there nationally. So we're right in line with what's happening nationally. And if you go to the Partnership for the 21st Century website, you'll see a lot of research that they've done. They're a national advocacy group, and they have come up with different student outcomes to prepare students for the 21st century. And so you'll see those outcomes in the rainbow, and then in the pools below, you will see the support systems that are in place. And the reason I even bring this to your attention is that you should be proud with the fact that you've approved all this funding towards the initiatives and towards technology, because what we are doing through the initiatives is exactly what's going on nationally, and it supports the research that is out there. So we're very excited about that. I can do it with this. I'm good.
Thank you.
So through our presentation, we're going to talk about why technology is important in our schools, how it's embedded into each of the initiatives. I may not be able to read my notes this way. What we've accomplished since July 1st, and what's planned for the remainder of the school year. I need a little flashlight. Okay, so moving on. These are two other organizations that are international. You've probably heard of the International Society of Technology and Education and the Consortium for School Networking. And they've done a lot of research. They've actually looked at all of the research, the case studies that are out there, and they have compiled all of that on their websites. And so what they're saying about the impact of technology in education is that it's really important, obviously, to include technology in our curriculum and in our schools. And so they're saying, through all the studies that they've done, is that it increases and improves student achievement, specifically in reading, writing, and math. Okay, because students are engaged in technology, it helps to create that learning environment that keeps them motivated. And so you see graduation rates increasing as well. Parental involvement through communication, technology makes that very easy. So you get more parental involvement that way. Productivity and decision making. We all rely on technology these days to do our work, to be more productive, and to help us be more data-based decision making. Teachers are taking online courses. They are improving their classroom practices through technology. In addition, technology impacts student learning, as we said, not just in those areas, but, for our students for the 21st century, they need more than just the basics these days. And so it's going to impact their student learning in a positive way. And technology is that balance that allows an equitable education for everyone, whether you're talking about special education students or students from low socioeconomic backgrounds. It's kind of that balancer. It gives them that access that they might not otherwise have. And so these are some of the benefits. And of course, it's going to prepare them for college and the workforce, building their skills along the way. They need a lot more than the basics, as I said a moment ago. They need to develop their interpersonal skills, self-directional skills, higher-order thinking skills, problem-solving. So technology really helps. So they'll share a little bit ReadWrite Gold is a new software program that we've purchased. It's in process of being implemented. Again, that's going to help our special needs students, our EL learners, and any child that is struggling with reading or writing. And this is going to be implemented at the secondary level, so our middle schools and high schools. We've done some training in cognitive coaching. We have completed 4 days out of 8, and this is something that Amy has organized for the district. The administrators and teachers on special assignments are involved in the coaching program, and this is to allow us to build our skills in coaching teachers and helping provide additional support in the classrooms. Also, we have the Breakthrough Coaching podcast series that the district purchased again this year. We started this program last year with the administrators to help us get out into the classrooms more and support the teachers and just get out to where the game is being played and be there for teachers and students. Through technology, we'll be increasing resources to our libraries, and that involves specifically the SED families, socioeconomically disadvantaged families. So we're really trying to reach out to those families. That is in progress. It hasn't been implemented yet, so we've been doing some research to determine the kinds of resources that are out there that we might be able to purchase, so we do have some funding towards this effort. Where I was going to have you come up.
Okay. So I'm Sharon Haupt. I'm the district elementary librarian, and I've been researching and looking at ebooks and e-readers and interactive databases and interactive books. And I was at a conference recently in Fresno where there was information presented about ebooks and e-readers, and one of the things that they presented from a nationwide survey of over 2,000 school libraries from School Library Journal is that 43% of schools are seeing an increase in their ebook and e-reader usage, and that 40% of schools are considering preloaded devices when they start lending these devices to their students. At school, teachers and students are reading on computers and other portable devices other than e-readers, and currently there are over 85 devices on the market for reading e-books or in interactive databases. So I'm sure you're all familiar with a Nook. So I have a Nook that I've been testing things out on and working with, things like that. And then the netbook. Oh, sure. Sorry. And then there's the netbook that we have here at school that is also a possibility for reading e-books and that kind of thing. And also the computers that come up with preloaded preloaded e-readers that are actually come with the computers. Part of the issue with e-books is that the current model that most people interact with is one book, one user. And the school needs are really different when you want to have multiple access for multiple users. Am I being timed? Okay, sorry. At school, there's a different need when you want to have multiple users access 24/7 multiple times, and you want to have a building like with 400 students be able to access the same e-books at the same time. The biggest challenges that I'm looking at and encountering for the K-12 environment is that the e-books and the e-reader devices are constantly changing, and that makes this a moving target. And so there's a fear of devices being outdated very, very quickly. And then access to e-content. Do we want that hosted on our server, or do we want to have it on the cloud? Then there's the equity issues with the devices, and what do we provide for all of those students who don't have anything. And then there's the issue of privacy for our patrons, especially if you connect with something like Amazon, where then all of that information with student information is available to Amazon. And then there's the filtering issue and access to the browsers that we need to think about. And the publishing market has not been as quick to respond, especially with e-textbooks. So that's a big challenge for us. There's the issue of recurring expenses. Can we maintain subscriptions to interactive databases? And if you don't know what an interactive database is, that's information that's all connected with videos and highlighting of text and reading aloud and interactive websites. So those are usually ongoing subscriptions as opposed to an ebook, which is a one-time purchase. When you have books on the cloud or on your server as an ebook, that doesn't eliminate copyright issues. And you cannot interlibrary loan ebooks.
For you that I wanted to share. You know, we think of our digital natives as having kind of this whole digital world because we're more digital immigrants. But to kids, it's just life, you know. Technology is just a part of their daily life. They are born with it, and it's totally seamless for them. So this video is a speech by Ian Jukes, who is a really well-known national speaker on technology and education reform. And I think he has some great information that I'd love for you to be able to share with you. So I'm going to back up. I think it's here, yes. Hopefully it's loud enough. Nope. Okay, so we'll need to go in the back and turn up the volume. And I'll turn it up here too. The master volume.
I don't think so. Yeah, it is. Good job.
Okay, we'll start it over. Well, it was working earlier. Yeah, it was connected through the audio here. So we'll stop. Somebody moved the cart, so
we just scooted it over.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Set. It was all working. Well, okay, if we can get it to work, we'll do it a little bit later.
What's the plug on your microphone? Can you plug into this?
I don't know. Yeah, we'll just keep going. Okay. All right. It was working earlier this afternoon, so my apologies. All right. So we'll move on.
Computer speaker and let it just.
That's an idea. The computer.
That's what I wondered if. Yeah. She could plug into it. So just hold the microphone up and let. Well, I don't hear anything.
There's nothing. There's nothing coming out.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so the last board meeting you heard about the intentional culture of care. And so what the district has been able to do is to provide additional elementary counseling support, and so that the counselors can work more closely with students and families, expand the support that has been provided in the past. And we have been working with the counselors on PowerSchool. So that is our student information database, and that is where they document all of the work that they're doing so that we can track how these students are doing over time. And so we did that training earlier this school year. And this morning we just completed training with our new administrators so they can learn how to use this, the school messenger, which is our emergency mobile, and they're going transferring between our school districts so that we're able to look at the data from when they were enrolled in LaCMR, for example, compared to PASO, and then when they're in our district, and be able to make database decision making. Our EdTech committee has been working on internet safety materials for our teachers. We're looking for a digital citizenship curriculum that is going to integrate right into what teachers are already doing. So it's in the process of being researched. Jennifer and Sharon are going to be working with that committee. And so we're excited and looking at the materials that are out there. And I misspelled curriculum, didn't I? Oh, well. Preschool, transitional K. Amy, of course, has been working extensively in this area. She'll be presenting at a future board meeting. I believe it's the next board meeting. So we're going to be looking at how do we start preparing these little preschoolers for the 21st century. You know, we have to take a look at that and see what we can do. So we're exploring the options. And we're looking at our math program very, very closely, STEM in general. So did she have to go, Rita? Okay. So Rita was going to talk a little bit about that. I'm going to go forward and then come back, because she's been intimately involved. She and Amy have been working with a community STEM group. So I know Rita wanted to share a little bit about that. So we'll come back. We're looking also at accelerated and specialized learning programs. You know, we have quite a bit going on in our district right now that allows students to get involved in these programs. Specifically, we have the robotics team that Jan was sharing about earlier. And then the Skills USA program, we have a lot of students going to those competitions, winning national and international awards. We have our PEG Video Labs. The Slow High program just recently won an award from the International Film Festival. So Cherie Jones works with her students, and they were selected for an award. Morro Bay was just honored by the California Art Educators Association for integrating art and technology into their curriculum. Liz Moore is the teacher that teaches the digital arts media class, and she was recently awarded also the ROP Teacher of the Year in our county, so we're very excited about that. So in addition to those programs, we're looking at visiting other programs so that we can take a look at possibly some magnet schools that might be out there. And at the high school and middle school level, high-tech schools specifically, some of these schools have one-to-one program models, which means that every student, every teacher has a device of some kind that they're using. And so we're looking at that very closely, and we're going to be visiting some programs, taking teachers, administrators out. And then we'd like to expand the attendance at two of the state conferences. CEPA is the California Educators Teachers Professional Association, and CUE is the Computing Users Education Conference. And so those take place every year in California. They're excellent conferences. They have a technical component, and then they have the educational component for teachers. And I've attended some excellent workshops at both of those conferences. Moving on to Initiative 7. Oh, you might recognize someone in that picture. Recognize Mr. Angel, former board member. He's using one of the Mobis that the teachers talked about earlier. Okay, so Initiative 7 is all about a data-rich culture. And, of course, Data Director is our district's data warehouse that houses all of our assessments and lots of student demographics data so that we can compare how kids are doing and compare over time. Did you want to talk about this and the STEM? That's okay.
Sure. We have been using Data Director, like we've presented before to you, for warehousing our student data, our achievement data, but now we've moved ahead and purchased an item bank with them. This benchmark item bank is what we're currently using to we've drafted our common assessments at the secondary level using them. And then we're also looking forward to possibly purchasing a classroom item bank so that our teachers will also have access to an item bank to, on their own, be able to create common assessments.
The parents' time, but it saved our clerical and secretarial staff tons of time. Typically, they manually enter all that data into PowerSchool every year. So this has been a huge time saver for the families and for our staff. So that was a huge plus. We got lots of positive feedback from parents on that. Okay, so we'll do the video. Thank you for getting the speakers. Appreciate it. All right, again, this is Ian Jukes.
Because of digital bombardment, because of the pervasive nature of digital experience today, that these children have become screen agers. This is the first generation in Singapore history that has actually grown up with a mouse in their hand, combined with an assumption that images on a screen are supposed to be manipulated and interacted with, that screens aren't just for passive viewing and consumption. These children have become, as Mark Prensky describes in his writing, digital natives who have grown up in the new digital landscape. And as a result of that, digital is their language of choice. You see, these kids are DFL. They speak digital as a first language. It is their native language. They were born into it. You see, the problem is that people of our generation and of our parents' generations are not digital natives. We don't speak digital as a first language. Do you understand that we are digital immigrants? We're immigrants because we come from another country. We come from a non-digital world. We come from a time and a place before digital technology, and as a result of that, many of us have old country traditions and assumptions about how the world works. You see, here's the problem. While these children are DFL, we speak DSL. We speak digital as a second language. And this is a very important distinction, and the reason is because absolutely new research is telling us that because of this digital bombardment, because of the new digital landscape, that the brains of the digital generation have been affected, that the brains of the digital generation have changed both physically and chemically, and that as a result of this, that our children are actually neurologically wired differently than we are. And even though we don't yet fully understand the incredibly complex processes involved in thinking and learning, I think it's really important during this presentation here today that we take a closer look at what we do know. And the first thing, as educators, you need to understand is that when we are born, we come into the world with about 50% of our brain wiring in place to handle the initial critical functions.
And the other 50% of the wiring takes place after birth. And it's really important for me to tell you this because for the longest time, conventional thinking has been that by the age of 3, that the brain had become stable. That from that point forward, it didn't really change. That by the age of 3, we then had a fixed number of brain cells, which then started to die off one by one with no appreciable new cell growth. And a result of that is that there was a long-standing assumption that by the age of 3, we all had fixed memory, we all had fixed mental processing power, we all had fixed intelligence, that basically you were stuck with what you were born with. And by the way, this was believed to be the case for all brains, regardless of race, regardless of culture, regardless of experience, that we all use the same, here they are right here, neural pathways or electronic circuitry, let's take a closer look at them here, to process, to store, and use information. However, in the past few years, almost all of those beliefs have been shown to be completely wrong. They've been able to use new scanning technologies that have been able to demonstrate that, on the contrary to our long-standing assumptions, that the brain is actually highly adaptive, it's highly malleable, and that our brains are constantly reorganizing themselves structurally throughout life based on two different factors. The first one is input and experience, and the second one, creating and then recreating new thinking patterns. Now, it's very important you understand that in the last 2 years, there have been a number of new books written on neuroplasticity in digital kids. And in the handout you'll be able to download from the MOE or from my website, I've included the number. But in particular, if I was king for a day, I would recommend that everyone in this room read a book by Stephen Johnson called Everything Bad Is Good for You. In this book, Johnson argues that the plots of today's video games, movies, television are challenging young viewers to think like grown-ups, to follow intricate narratives, and to analyze complex social networks. And as a result of this, what Johnson suggests is that these students of ours have become very sophisticated thinkers who, amongst other things, have learned to take risks without being reckless, have learned to deal with failure, are confident, are motivated, and expect a lot of themselves in areas that they care about. As Johnson points out, though, the problem here is that while they are developing sophisticated and valuable thinking skills, these are skills that are not generally measured by the current school system or the test system that we use. Now, there's another related book by a fellow by the name of Daniel Pink. It's called A Whole New Mind. And Pink says that we have been raised that today we live in a linear, logical, left to right, top to bottom, beginning to end, left brain society. This left brain society is and has long been the mindset behind education. Pink says that the role of the right side of the brain, which predominantly handles things like pattern analysis, big picture thinking, intuition, and the like, has long been undervalued, long been underappreciated, long been misunderstood in our predominantly left-brain society. But what Pink says is, do you understand that almost anything that involves predominantly left-brain thinking is either going to be automated, it's going to be turned into software or hardware, or it's going to be outsourced? And as a result of that, if our children are going to survive, let alone thrive in the culture of the 21st century, if our kids are not just going to be prepared for their, if they're going to be prepared for their future, not our past, that we as educators need to help them learn how to use both hemispheres effectively to be able to use a whole new mind.
Okay, thank you. Let's do that. Thank you. Okay. So, boy, we've got a lot of work to do, don't we, to reach these kids and make sure they're prepared for the 21st century. So that's our goal, and one of the ways we're going to expand access for kids is through purchasing additional tools, upgrading our infrastructure. On top of our infrastructure now, after we upgrade it, we're going to get Wi-Fi to these kids. We're going to give teachers and kids much more expanded access, because that's what we need to do. They're going to have saturation of Wi-Fi. They can access their wireless devices anywhere on campus, including the football field, the quad areas, every classroom, lecture halls, auditoriums, so that they will be prepared for the 21st century. And we're going to do this by 2014. So it's going to be phased in. We're going to do a few schools at a time. We're in the process of planning this bid. It's going to go out to bid later this month. Depending on the numbers, we'll know further. We'll be working with business services to figure out how soon we can get it all in place for all of our schools. So we're very excited about that, and that was built into the initiatives. So thank you for doing that. You can see that teachers are already doing some wireless with the Mobis through the Bluetooth and the clickers, which you've heard them talk about in the pictures. We have Patricia Mishnick. They're using a Mobi at Del Mar, and those are some Del Mar students, too. I'm not sure which classroom. But we're going to be expanding that Wi-Fi access. We've been very busy over the summer and this fall, upgrading a lot of our computers, putting in new computers with Windows 7. At four of our schools so far, we purchased 275 laptops and netbooks for teachers and administrators. Very exciting. To have this technology, because they're going to be able to access the Wi-Fi immediately once it's in place with their laptop, take it wherever they go.
Okay. Well, as I shared with you during September's board meeting, I've been providing support to classroom teachers in the area of technology. And some of the items I've been working on in the last 8 weeks have been providing blogging workshops to promote the homeschool connection for both students and parents with their child's classroom. And I have these scheduled on an ongoing basis. The teachers love them, and I love going out there, and we just continually work and build our blogs. The Read 180 pilot is up and running, and this is an intervention reading program that integrates technology into the classrooms and into the lessons. And like Amelia said, students use wireless laptops to access the program during some of the rotations, and the teacher can actually directly teach from the computer as the lesson is projected. And as you heard earlier, teach grants. Several teachers wrote grants for various forms of technology that were funded, and I will continue to support and encourage teachers to write grants, teach grants, and other grants that are available all throughout the year. The mobile interactive whiteboards, or Mobis, are now being used more frequently in the classrooms. I have provided some trainings and support documents for teachers, but I've also coordinated future trainings with DecoTech, our supplier, at no charge to the district. Student response pads, or clickers, are being used in our classrooms as well to provide the teacher with immediate feedback from the students. And these are highly engaging, and they interact with the Mobi as well. The document cameras are slowly replacing overhead projectors. Besides just projecting an image, these have the capability to capture or annotate over, save images, project on a split screen, and they can be integrated with the Mobi as well. So I have coordinated training for both of our middle schools next week on these advanced features of the doc cams. And we look forward to our training, and again, this is at no charge to the district. So if you'd click on to the next slide, and there is my my EdTech Tips and Tricks webpage. And here you'll see many helpful tutorials that either I've created or that have been created in the past by Eric Jarvis. And in the center there, if you'll click on where you'll see my blog. And this is where I update news and highlight our classrooms for the future. So, Amelia, if you click on Future Classrooms, let's go ahead and take a quick look at a video that showcases some of the programs and techie tools that we've been talking about tonight.
and how to be more. So more than means plus, right? So that's how he knew.
Do you have any questions for me right now?
Okay,
so thank you.
So you want to go check out her blog and the website. All right, and our final initiative, Initiative 10, looking at college and career pathways, we have a new online course that is being taught by a PASO teacher, and we have several students enrolled at our high schools. So this is very exciting. This is a first for our district, and we're also looking at purchasing a graduate statistics database so we can track students after they graduate. And so, Rita, did you want to say anything else about the ROP program?
You know, I just want to thank both with Read 180 and with ROP. Jennifer O'Hagan has just done a tremendous job of supporting our teachers, and our Read 180 teachers are real troopers because you have to work through the whole program and learn all the parts to really support the students. So I just wanted to acknowledge her again. I mean, we work with the individual students in our district to make sure they're getting the access they need online so they can be successful in that course. And I was just reviewing that contract today for the online database, so that's in process.
Thank you. Okay. So as we round it out, and I will take time for questions or comments, I wanted to share a couple of quotes with you, because even though John Dewey was an educational reformer way back in the first half of the 20th century, you know, what he says still applies today, because if we teach today's students as we taught yesterday's students, we truly do rob them of tomorrow. And Ian Jukes, the gentleman we heard earlier, I've got another short 2-minute video clip that I'd love you to see, because he talks about how today's learners are not the same learners that our schools were originally designed for. So we're going to look at that, and then I'll be glad to take questions, and I appreciate all your focused attention, even with our tech issues.
Understanding the digital generation. Many people think that the key to preparing students for life in the future means getting technology into the classroom and teaching them technology skills. No, the real focus for teaching for tomorrow is on moving to new roles for both the student and the teacher. It's about new ways of teaching. It's about new ways of learning. It's about new ways of being able to assess that learning. The kids today can't even memorize the names of the states and the capitals. Meanwhile, that same kid is saying, why in the world do I have to memorize the names of the states and the capitals when I can Google the answer in 3 seconds on my cell phone? Meanwhile, many teachers are saying, but what's a Google? And the reason we're having this problem is that today's learners are not the same learners that schools were originally designed for. And I'll tell you this, if there's one certainty about what today's school children are going to be doing a decade or two from now, it's that they won't be all doing the very same thing at the very same time, and they certainly won't be drawing upon the same body of knowledge. That's why education has to change. But what I'm asking you to do is to change one activity and lesson, one lesson and unit, one unit a term, to take baby steps as the way of beginning to move yourself, to begin to move your students, to begin to move your school from where they are to where they need to be.
Okay, so I think we're taking giant baby steps in a lot of areas. And I appreciate your attention. And this has truly been a team effort. You know, Sharon's done a lot of research on the e-books and e-readers. And Rita and Amy have been right in there, too. So all the departments have been involved, even BG&T, with mounting the projectors, getting out there to make sure everything's set up properly, the wiring, cabling. So it's been a real team effort. And thank you again.
Walter has a question, followed by...
Excuse me. In the discussions of the use of technology in the classroom, is the emerging concerns regarding screen exposure for children part of the discussion? And are we structuring our use of technology through the day so that we're cognizant that at least there's some concerns? And I don't know very much about it. It's just what's been in the popular media the last year or so.
Mm-hmm. The computer screens themselves?
Well, there's been some research regarding the amount of time that children, particularly young children, since we're going to push technology into the pre-K and K elementary realm. What I'm questioning is there an awareness? Yeah.
But in large measure, our kids are still in a very exposed to a traditional model of learning, teaching and learning still. I don't see an overindulgence or an overexposure to technology in our district, especially a whole lot of this. I don't see that. But I imagine that, as Ian Jukes was saying, that what we're encouraging our teachers to do is to engage the learners in group thinking, in utilizing technology to achieve an end, but not become the end. And I really believe that's the focus, not to just throw a digital device and say, the day is done and this is what you need to do. I don't ever see us doing that. I don't think that will ever become best practice either. And I think that's my assurance to you.
I think it's exciting. I've visited a few classrooms. In fact, I visited my daughter Christine's classroom down in San Diego for a fifth grade classroom. And, I mean, to me, the freedom of the teacher just to move around the classroom and both interact and monitor, and then the excitement of the kids with the responding devices and being able to see what's going on was just startling to me. The other question I have, and I'm just going to throw it out there for consideration, is what's the future of cursive in the world of technology? So, as a veteran of learning cursive the old-fashioned way. I'm very impressed with the presentation and the use of this technology. I didn't want to throw in a downer, but I was just, the thought had occurred to me.
Thank you. No problem.
Yeah, again, thank you for the presentation. I have a question, kind of the piece about how are we going to manage all this usage and technically in our district. I mean, I saw something go out the other day about teachers streaming music, and if we have a difficult time with too many teachers streaming music at the same time, how are we technically going to be able to manage this when every student has a device, and if they're all tuning in to some, either streaming music, streaming, looking at YouTube, how are we going to manage this if we are? Yeah. It seems like we're already not able
saturating,
to manage what
yeah.
we have right now.
Right.
So
we're building that into the Wi-Fi plans. So we're looking at increasing that pipe that takes us out to the internet, increasing all the equipment surrounding that. And Russell, jump in if you'd like to speak to that.
I mean, this just seems to be something that, since I've been around in this district, has been a problem. And it's been a problem. It's been a hindrance for teachers to be able to use the technology, I think, the way they would wish to. And and it's, I'd like to just know that as we have these great plans and thoughts and ideas, that they can actually all work and all work at the same time with people being able to actually do what they want to do.
Right.
A significant issue for our technology is the capacity that we have and the capacity that we need. And I think that if you were to look at the issues and the growth of particular usages and particular technologies, the problem is the hardware lags behind. And so what we're always doing is playing catch-up to new innovative technologies that occur. What we have is a system that was constructed in 1995 through 2000, and what we've been able to do is upgrade slowly some capacities on our server banks. The server banks are essentially our nerve center, and the capacity of our servers generates the capacity to accommodate such things as Pandora and other usages that when it predominates throughout our employee groups, it's not necessarily about teaching, okay? And it creates an awful lot of backlog inside the capacity of our own system. So what we did last week, what you saw, was we ceased to support an activity that really doesn't have any educational value, or if it does, it needs to be managed a little bit better, and that's what we're engaged in, is managing our limited resources. What you see on the presentation today is the initiative for the classroom of the future is to recognize that we need to increase our capacity and how we're going to do that. And what we're going to do is we're going to take our current fiber optic network, which is absolutely the best of anything you can possibly have, bar none, and add to it a Wi-Fi system that is equally robust and has capacity built into it. With those two things passing the neurons through all of the nerve centers and in upgrading our server networks, we think we can handle.
It's very exciting. It seems that we're bringing technology to the teachers and teaching the teachers technology. I think I got that right. And I think that I'd like to thank you because I think we're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank those schools and staffs that sort of went out on the edge and took some gambles.
Mm-hmm.
I know the Mobys came in.
Del Mar. Brought
thank
those
you.
To us, yeah.
And took the risk to go out there and go out on a limb and find those. And that's really exciting as well. We do have some really strong change agents.
And Smith was not far behind, if I remember. They beat you, though.
So I just want to thank both the technology and also those
thank you.
Also those folks out there that are willing to take the chances.
That's right. We have a lot of innovative teachers that are willing to jump in there. So we appreciate that. PTA, I think, funded the first round of Mobys for Del Mar, right? Yeah. $30,000 worth, she's saying. So, all right. Any other questions? Thank you.
Just, I really have a couple of observations. And first of all, I want to thank you for the presentation.
You're
I want to
welcome.
Thank Matosas for the hard work they're doing with the teachers and helping them implement technology in a classroom. But I fear I'm a bit of a Luddite sometimes. And you can Google that if you're not sure what that is, because I had to memorize it. But, you know, there is the day, or at least the day when the power goes out, and that does happen more often in Morro Bay than you would realize. I mean, not yearly, but, you know, where a teacher has to, you know, think on their feet and be able to, you know, conduct a classroom without, you know, electronic media and so forth. So I think that's one thing. Another observation I found that students also need to find ways of being resourceful when things aren't available to them. I recalling a particular assignment that I've given students over the year was to conduct some research on Greek gods and goddesses, and they immediately ran to the computers, and if they couldn't find something that was usable or they were locked from one website or another, you know, if they picked Eros or something like that, they were stymied. They didn't, you know, and that's where the teacher had to come in and say, well, you know, maybe there's some other way of finding this information. And I think that's, to me, that's a bit of a concern is, you know, I love all these things that are interactive and that the students can do, but the idea of what do you do when those aren't available? What resources do you have, and how creative can you be in finding those? So anyway, mm-hmm. just an observation, but again, thanks for the hard work.
You're welcome. I think that we need to find a balance and teach kids to do traditional research too, because they need that as well. What they learn through that process helps them. Thank you.
Well, it did. And we're laying in a stock of kerosene for those days.
Okay.
I have an observation about this, and Walter, I'm going to take us back about 11 years. Remember when we required the computer apps class at the two high schools, and I can remember the discussion was, do we have a separate computer apps class, or do we infuse computer and technology throughout the curriculum? And we went with the computer apps class. I've got to say, I didn't like it, because I thought what we needed to do was exactly what we're doing today, and I'm so happy to hear that it's taken 11 years. This is what we're doing. We're seeing kids from basically kindergarten on really infusing technology into their daily lives. And so I guess the question is, continuing to be, how can we support that? Mm-hmm. And I guess I have to wonder, is the computer apps class, it's probably not the same class that we saw back in whenever it was, 2001, and hopefully that's helping the students use today's technology for their learning.
Definitely. So. Yeah, they're upgrading to Office 2010 next term, so,
okay.
So they'll be right on top of it. Thank you.
All right.
Do you want to address that, Jen?
If you'd let me for a moment. Just listening to Walt's concern about too much screen time for the children, and Jim's concern about what happens if the lights go out, and even what you saw today with the sound issues. That's happening all the time. And I'm out in the classrooms with the teachers, and they are very creative. And this, like in the video that I showed, the students were not all they didn't all have Mobis. They were actually using the traditional whiteboards and markers to resolve their math problems, and then using the clickers in response to that. So there's
do anything, try baby steps, and maybe something will change, and we might get some progress in this world. But as it exists, they refuse to move. Nothing changes. We have status quo. Thank you.
And the countdown for the trigger continues.
And the countdown is December 15th or thereabouts, and then the legislative actions occur after that trigger information is known. So we're within, it's not, I don't think it's too desperate to say, we're within 6 weeks of doomsday. And ultimately, the trigger, if pulled, and if the legislative actions are put into play, then there are districts that are going to be seriously compromising their ability to educate children.
Right, and it reminds me of, I think it was Dr. Strangelove with the doomsday machine, where everybody was destroyed because of their their poor choices. So,
and Mr. Unger,
yes.
If I may, I noticed the budget report, state of the budget from the last meeting that I was able to watch recorded, and this one, and I just can't help but comment that while they become thinner on facts, they become philosophically very provocative.
And I apologize for that.
No.
But
no apology necessary.
But I'm left with a dearth of information to impart. There isn't any. So if there's no information, I like to go philosophical at least. It gives me some element of satisfaction.
Dr. Prater, are you ready to talk about the tentative agreement with SLCTA?
Rick Robinette.
I'll actually follow up, and there's no philosophizing here. And in fact, we are precluded in a public meeting to talk about details of any tentative agreements without it being part of a public hearing. However, I will let the public and the board know that we did reach tentative agreement with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, the board, and SLCTA. We're looking forward to ratification of an agreement by SLCTA by next week. We're looking forward to bringing that to the board for public hearing and ratification. And I think we're very pleased with reaching a very good settlement with our Teachers Association that I think is going to ultimately benefit our students, which is what it's all about.
Thank you, Mr. Robinette. Let's move on to item number one, preschool licensing authorization. Amy Shields.
Good evening.
Thanks to Initiative 3, we are moving forward in developing preschools at some of our selected elementary school sites, and we are in the process of submitting applications for licenses to make those really an official preschools. Part of that process is we have to have a resolution approved by our school board allowing us to name designees at these various sites to apply for the license as well as receive information and feedback from the licensing agency. So I'm here tonight to ask you to approve resolution number 81112.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there a discussion from the board members about this item? Seeing none, we'll take a motion, please. Mrs. Scheffler.
I would move that we adopt resolution number 08-11-12.
I have a motion.
I'll second that.
And a second by Mr. Quisenberry. Any other discussion? Mrs. Holmes.
Mrs. Scheffler. Mr. Quessenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Passes 6-0.
Let's move on to item number 2, proposed revisions to board policy 4020, all personnel alcohol and drug-free workplace. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, CSBA has put forward a couple of recommendations in terms of changes to our current board policy. Pretty basic changes, I think. If you look on page A there, so instead of simply saying and stating school and district operations, it spells it out to basically say staff and student safety and to help ensure a productive and safe work and learning environment. As well as at the bottom, it also specifies kind of a broader range of when we consider somebody to be on duty. And so two kind of basic changes to the board policy that we already have established.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Is there any discussion on this item? Mr. Millar.
I'm puzzled, Ryan, by mm-hmm. Paragraph 1, the superintendent designee. So the employee has a duty to notify the employer of a conviction of a drug or alcohol-related statute occurring in the workplace. Wouldn't the employer already know about the drug and alcohol violation? No?
You would think so, but in case,
so
it would be a statutory.
A set of circumstances where maybe somebody's working but comes to the attention of the...
To humor you, yes.
I would. I when we move this, I okay. with that change.
Okay.
Can we do that with
a yes?
Can we do that with a pen and pencil, or are you okay with a computer?
That's fine. Pen and pencil works fine for
okay.
me.
Okay. Is there any further discussion from board members?
Yeah,
Mr. Buckman.
I just was. You know, I appreciate CSBA's updates, and it's always nice because it lets us re-examine board policies. The last time this was adopted was in 2003. So I'd like to just throw out some thoughts. In the second paragraph of the board policy, it refers to the drugs and controlled substances as defined by the Federal Code of Regulations. And I'm wondering whether we might want to consider also including the state code, because while the federal sets a limit, the state code can be more restrictive, and we may want to at least... explore, examine, or make sure that we're not missing anything that could appear in the state penal code.
Okay. Mrs. Schumper?
My guess is the state of California is less restrictive than the feds because of some of our recent laws about marijuana and the ability for people to have medical marijuana cards and the employees and accommodation. I mean, they may be in conflict at times, and then there would be decisions to be made. But I don't know, without researching which is more or less restrictive, I don't know that we can make a change to satisfy you without knowing whether the state is indeed more restrictive.
Yeah, and I appreciate your comment about it being to require from me, but I'm hoping it's something that we're going to do for the district and the staff to protect students. I do believe there are certain sections within the penal code that are more specific than the federal code. I'm not sure, but it might just be as easy as making a phone call to our attorney. And it's at the pleasure of the board. It's just a suggestion.
Okay. Other questions or comments?
Well, I believe the reference is to the Controlled Substance Act and the Code of Federal Regulations is to establish the definition of alcoholic beverage, drug, or controlled substance.
And if you actually go to the OSHA website, it gives it very detailed. It's like 18 pages of all the different types of drugs and alcohol in terms of the, you know, as you said, defining those terms. If you look on the very back page, too, the legal reference side in terms of the education code as well as the government codes that kind of support this board policy are listed there as well.
If I can just add one more thing, and I'm not sure whether this gets to what your issue is, Mr. Buckman, but most of the one of the reasons we need to use this, you know, making sure we have a board policy on a drug and alcohol-free workplace is in applying for applications for grants and also in making certifications under Title I, II, and III, which are all federal programs. And we have to have those in line with Government Code 21, which I think is the controlled substance section of the U.S. Code. So it's probably referring to that because of the connection with are receiving of federal funds. It still might be something that we can look at, you know, the state, but I think that's probably where a lot of that comes from.
And I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate that this may apply for the grants, but I think it's also our policy for controlling for creating drug and alcohol-free workplaces at the school sites. Again, I think it's not a do or die for me, but it may be as simple as a phone call to our attorney. So it's at the pleasure of the board.
Well, this is the first reading of this of this proposed policy. Is it the pleasure of the board that we bring it back to the next meeting with actually the changes that Mr. Quisenberry has suggested for the language in paragraph number 5 and the research that Mr. Buckman has requested? Is that the pleasure of the board? Okay. So we'll bring this back for a second reading.
Could I just have a clarification on what exactly Mr. Buckman's question is, because I'm not clear what you're seeking. What your question to the attorneys or would be? I'm unclear.
I guess in order to protect our students and our workplaces as strongly as we can, I want to give the I would hope that the administration would have all the tools that it needs and as resources to use, and it's possible that the state penal code, which has two lists of
cover some of the aspects of this policy within other aspects of both board policy, administrative regulations, and our conduct code and our parent notification of rights, but it kind of collects some things right in one spot. This is because of some amendments that were added to the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, which is sometimes referred to as FERPA, been around for at least 20 years, protecting the rights of students and family with regard to records. However, there's been some amendments added to the federal regulations under Title 20 to also extend and make sure that boards of education are also establishing rules on other aspects of privacy rights beyond just student records. And the three that are kind of covered broadly within this policy are the collection of personal information on students for marketing or sale, the idea of regulations for how the district administers surveys and collects information about students, and on whether the district and what rules they would have in administering non-emergency invasive physical examinations. We do have some suggested AR language that was given to us by CSBA, which we've also tweaked. I think it might be helpful to provide that for the board, maybe, you know, in between this being a first reading and a second reading, to kind of see what we've done with some of those, because, again, we've covered many of these areas in other board policies For example, we're very careful about not having personal information of students be used for marketing or sale, except for very prescribed reasons in high schools. If you would consider colleges and military recruiting as a marketing tool, we have a positive parent. They have to mark on an emergency card if they would allow that to happen. With regard to surveys, we do need to put some good AR language in terms of the collection of survey information that might have to do with political affiliations, beliefs, sexual behavior or attitudes, religious practices. So we've written ARs on that one to cover ourselves. But our practice has always been, in anything the least bit controversial, to get that parent information prior to issuing those surveys. And we do not do any invasive physical examinations. In fact, the three I's, what are they? Incision, insertion, and injection are not anything we do without parent permission ahead of time. Our physical examinations are along the line of hearing, vision, and scoliosis screenings. But anyway, this is the policy that kind of covers the blankets of making sure there are regulations in place for these areas. And I can try to answer any questions.
So, Mr. Robinette, this is what is referred to as the CUME file, if you were just, is that what we colloquially call it?
Most of the FERPA rules have to do with the CUME file. This is, you know, FERPA's kind of been broadened to other areas that have to do with the rights, both the privacy rights of students and also the privacy rights of families and what students might report about their families, which is where the survey stuff comes in.
Can you just explain to us a little bit about who has access to the CUME file or any of these files that are put together? Can parents go in at any time and say, I'd like to see my child's CUME file?
Oh, sure. Yeah, parents have absolute access. And there's probably a list about nine different categories of people that have access to student files. But for our intents and purposes, it's pretty much limited to the parents, the students, and school personnel. But there's a laundry list. I can provide that for you of kind of how students can access and what constitutes a cumulative record, because that's sometimes there might be things in a student's cumulative file which is really not part of their permanent record. So, but yes, parents can inspect that at any time.
One question that came up earlier when we were talking about classrooms of the future was if we had e-readers, for example, and then your email now is now known to the recipient. So that may be something we can add to this.
I think
language.
We're facing a brave new world in terms of FERPA and just, you know, with technology, because the more we may have situations where students have accounts or they're accessing things that could get to marketing, we're going to have issues. Mm-hmm. Which I think is why CSBA wrote this so generally, so that we can constantly be changing our administrative regs. You know, if you read this board policy, it's kind of written to say there shall be regulations, but it doesn't specify what the regulations are. And I think that's because, you know, we're seeing legal updates every month on new issues regarding, you know, cell phones and technology, and I think we're going to see the need to constantly be tweaking our own regulations as things change.
So is it the pleasure of the board that we act on this tonight, or would you like to bring this back for a second reading next meeting?
If everybody's comfortable with it.
Okay. Catherine?
I would like to see the ARs.
Okay. Mark, you want to see the ARs? Walter? Okay. So we'll bring this back. Okay, let's move on to the action consent agenda. Item number 4, approval of certificated and classified personnel items, acceptance of donations, disposition of surplus property, approval of California High School exit exam waiver for student with disabilities, approval of purchase orders, approval of warrants and payroll. Okay, is there anybody from the public that would like to speak on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Any board discussion? Take a motion on this, Mr. Buckman.
Yes, I'd move that we approve the consent agenda as presented.
Okay.
Yes, second.
It's been a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to number 11, and that would be advanced agenda. Let's go ahead. Is there any requests for additions to the advanced for the advanced agenda? Okay, seeing none at this time, we'll move on to item number 12, which is reports by board members. Do we have any reports by board members? Mr. Buckman.
Just quickly, I recently had a chance to stop off at Monarch and take a look at the transitional kindergarten and preschool kindergarten, and the classrooms are wonderful. They're set up. They have their own bathrooms, and I think that we're in a really great position to put those programs into place.
Great. Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers, is there anything you'd like to add?
Just that, that Chris and I were able to participate early in the morning with Mr. O'Connor at Slo High School with the entire staff and faculty at Slo High as they evaluate their criteria for the WASC review and what their emphases are going to be in terms of their academic improvement plan. And that's, it's great to hear everyone informally discuss and prioritize and go back and forth about where the emphasis is going to be placed. Is it's a great process.
Okay. And I had the opportunity to also go with Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers to San Luis High yesterday and participate in the WASC discussion. And then I got to have lunch with the teachers and a tour of the campus with Mr. O'Connor today. It was really great, and I appreciate all the time the teachers spent with me. Got to see some language classes, home ec, computer apps, art, auto, metal, wood. And I thought one of the coolest things I saw today was in wood shop with Jed Brewington. He is actually working in wood shop with a blind student. And the blind student is using power tools independently. Jed's found a material that can be cut with various things. He's got essentially a vibrating circular saw that cannot cut you but can cut material, and he's got a little like mini band saw that he's taken the teeth off of that will also cut it. It's pretty impressive. So hopefully Jed will get some pictures and be able to see what this guy's doing, because it's pretty cool stuff. Jim?
I also had a chance to go to San Luis High. I had a chance to take a very brief tour of the metal shop area and to observe part of Mr. Fay, Tim Fay's class, and then he took some time to show me the CNC machines and what they're capable of and how he incorporates some physics in his classes. Was over at Morro Bay High School and observed Jack Greer's weightlifting class, and I have to mention that a student not in the class came in and was very distraught and watched Mr. Greer deal with this student, and it brings into focus for me that teachers just don't present curriculum. They also deal with a multitude of student issues. And anyway, I thought Jack did a great job, and I just want to commend him for that. Thanks.
I think that's it. We'll adjourn this meeting.